tonight.
We are delighted to welcome James Dunn, author of Finding Light in Dark Times. James has a master's degree in organizational psychology and many other qualifications that he will be happy to tell you about. So, why don't you welcome James Dunn. Thank you so much.
Good evening. When I was a teenager in Colorado, I was a backpacker. Spent a lot of nights up in the foothills of Pike Peak. One morning, I was coming down alone. I backpacked a couple of days, coming down alone, and it was probably 5 in the morning. Very, very weak light, and I was walking along this flat area that was aspen grove. Very sweet light filtering down through the leaves. And in the distance, barely visible, I could see this little figure coming toward me. And we got closer and closer. Neither of us spoke. It was turned out to be a little tiny man, a Chinese man, named Jiahu Feng. Anyone heard of him? He was one of the early translators of the Tao Te Ching that came to this country and to the West. And he worked with a woman named Jane English, and she did a lot of the photography. Anyway, Jiahu Feng ran a Taoist meditation center at the foot of Pike's Peak. So he and I found him to be a companion on the trail regularly. He was doing walking meditations, and I was doing no meditations. So we would encounter each other and speak almost none over years. And yet I could feel his presence, very sweet, gentle man who knew a great deal about being still. So I started studying philosophy, Western philosophy, Eastern philosophy. I went to college in Boulder and I studied math and psychology and everything else I could get my hands on. And I started sitting. And that's in the 1970s. Started sitting pretty much every day. So it's been more than well over 30 years now of daily practice. And I studied Zen and Confucianism, and as well as Taoism and all of the Sufism. Very interesting. Boulder, if any of you have been there, is a mecca of spiritual inquiry. It's just a treat. So, but back in the days when I was studying all of that, I felt like I knew a great deal. I had all kinds of knowledge. And as the years went by, I kept sitting and found that I knew a little less each year. Last year, I put everything I knew into the book, and eventually I'll know nothing. And that's kind of where we're all headed, is realizing how little we know and how sweet that can be. So the book is a great deal about how to deal with loss, how to deal with hardship, adversity, challenge. Anybody in here lost both parents? Most everyone. Anyone lost a relationship? Yeah. It's almost the human condition to reckon with loss and to learn how to become resilient from that and grow even from it. So as the years have gone by, I've found that the losses that I've been through, which have been as profound as anyone's, I have tried to sit with those losses and dig into them and spend more time with them than perhaps I needed to, just to find, you know, the roots there, find the core of those losses. So what I do is generally give you all a book. You can start by doing that. So, I work very much in the present. The book is about finding the present. And so what I generally do with these talks is find what you want to talk about, either from the book or from your own losses or from whatever you find intriguing. I can talk about any chapter in the book. You'll find that there are some 180, what I call growth notes, along the way. And those come from all kinds of backgrounds, and some of them very playful, some of them quirky. So what I would suggest is, why don't we go back to the losses? Somebody who's been through a relationship loss in the last year. Any of you? You're elbowing her? Your mom, okay. I lost my dad 3.5 years ago.
Her mom, she didn't lose me.
Oh.
She's my mom, but my dad died 2 years ago, and my older brother died.
Uh-huh. So you've been through two, and was your brother's loss recent?
It was 2 weeks before my dad.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's had another loss.
Yes, she's gone with it through it with you. Yeah. So, would you be willing to talk a little bit about that or share that with us?
I haven't gotten there yet.
You're not there yet. Okay. How about you? Don't want to talk about it. Okay. I can talk about my dad, right, which was 3.5 years ago. He was a hiker up until his 80s. Very avid. He lived in Southern California and was known in the community. He lived near Forest Falls, and he went up there 3-4 times a week. Hiked off the trails usually because he just was fit enough to do it, and he seemed to like the quiet. So he would get to know all of the animals up there. He was a friend of the bighorn sheep, and had seen a cougar a couple of times. And you know, I had gotten to know him to the point where I was talking with him pretty much every day for the last 10 years of his life. And as he aged and I could see him growing smaller and smaller and thinner and thinner, I thought, I wish a cougar would take him out. Which is an interesting thought, but for him, he was a kind of a wild spirit and loved the mountains, loved the creatures in it. I thought that would be an appropriate way for him to go. Unfortunately, he didn't have that luxury. Not that I would want him to suffer pain, but if a cougar could have maybe jumped him from the back and just done it quickly, he's gone. Just a cougar. Anyway, he ended up with stage 4 colon cancer, and he felt it for weeks and weeks before it actually got to the point where it took him down. And oddly enough, he thought it was an old skiing injury. He was a downhill ski racer when he was a young guy and had crashed and wrecked a few ribs, and so he thought it was that injury coming back to haunt him decades and decades later. And I kept on the phone saying, come on, you gotta be kidding. Go check it out. And he just didn't like doctors. So we flew him from Southern California up here to Sonoma County, which is where we had grown up as kids. I grew up in Petaluma, so I'm very much of a local person. And the interesting thing came up, I don't know what happened with your family, but I have 5 children in the family, 2 me and my brother and then 3 sisters. So my mother died way back in 1991, so that was long, long before his time. So we got together as the 5 children to decide, what do we do with Dad? He's obviously fading quickly. He's sliding in and out of dementia because of partly the pain medication and partly just where he was with the illness. And the doctor pretty much said, you don't have much time. Realize that. Each of you, if you want to say goodbye to your dad individually, find a way to do it. And so I was pretty much there with him already because of my relationship was quite close. But I watched my brother and my sisters kind of ease their way in and out of the bedside with him. My brother really trying to struggle with the old conflicts that he had not yet resolved. So the reckoning with that loss for me was very healthy. And I found when he actually died, I felt very little sense of trauma. It was a peaceful going for him and me, and I felt just really glad that in the last decade I had a time to talk with him every day, pretty much. So was your the dad's passage? Were you close with him?
I wasn't close.
Yeah.
My mom. It was really sad because he had been with my brother through liver cancer.
Yeah.
And he died.
Just right before.
On January 28th, and then they went home to get ready to come back to the memorial, and he ended up in the hospital. Couldn't go to the memorial. She ended up in the hospital. She was on a different floor than he was, and he died. She was in the hospital in the morning. It was pretty sad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Didn't get sick at all.
Yeah. So, for you and anyone who goes through that kind of, it's a bit of a wrenching loss, is really what you're reckoning with. You have all kinds of things to contend with, and there's, I've studied dying, Kubler-Ross and all that theory, but dealing with it on your own is, it's, as you know, completely different from anything you might study, and the other person's path is different from yours.
Yeah.
And yours has its own integrity and its own way that will find you pretty much. I feel for you. Mm-hmm. How about other people with more? Anyone had a job loss in the last several years? I find that a lot recently with the economic times. Anybody lost? Yes.
Foreclosure.
Very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. Very difficult.
Yeah. Was it a house you'd lived in a long while?
Well, 3 years, which is actually the longest I've lived anywhere.
Uh-huh.
And I loved it.
You loved the house?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Was it in Sonoma County here?
In Sebastopol.
Oh.
I miss it.
Yeah.
I'm going through a lot of financial stuff as a result of that. So.
Yeah.
It's definitely lost.
People fall in love with houses.
Yes.
They really do. They become not just shelter, but mm-hmm. this sense of the entire sweetness of their life kind of feeds mm-hmm. into the woodwork mm-hmm. almost and becomes part of it. And there's a beauty in that relationship. So it's very real. It's not just, you got to go from one space to live to another.
Mm-hmm.
It's very traumatic in some ways. So. Where, did you own it alone, or did you have...
By myself.
By yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, as a single parent. So
wow. Brave and...
Challenging.
Yeah. And you'd owned it for how long?
3.5 years.
3.5 years.
Yeah.
So you bought it at not a great time in terms of the cycle.
Yes.
But how do we all know?
Well, see, that hindsight, of course.
It's great, isn't it?
Yes.
That's great.
Right, so...
Yeah. So for you, dealing with that... lost, you go back by the house and sort of visit her?
I was just mentioning that I wanted to go back, and also my daughter went to school here, so there's just a lot of connection, and I keep wanting to go back.
Yeah. Well, you probably should. And you may cry in front of the house, that's okay.
It just seems kind of like... I don't want to inflict pain because I feel like I should have gotten over it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like it should be done.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing that you just mentioned there. You don't want to inflict pain on yourself? Yeah. What I find, it may be different for each person, what I find is that when I have gone through something painful, like a loss that you're talking about, or your father, I try not to flee the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, at least for me, a way that has worked and has been a source of growth. If I, instead of fleeing the pain, maybe wallow in it, which seems crazy, but it seems like almost self-indulgent to wallow in the pain. But interestingly enough, it often goes away more quickly if you get in, just dive in and swim around in there and find all the crevices where the pain is worse.
So you're saying welcome it instead instead of, you've had enough time, that's that, you should be done, just to kind of process it, really allow
that. Yeah, accept that the emotional quality in there, it's some of it very dark, some of it wrenching, disturbing, makes you think about yourself, did I make a big mistake, I blew it on the timing, you can trash yourself in a thousand ways. But if you go into that trauma, the pain, and just sit there with it, and try to relax and dig in a bit, at least I think you'll find that it'll ease more quickly. And you'll find something in there, maybe they're the source for a new house somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it may be years away, but the house that you left behind there is really in you, right? All the love that you put into it, you still have that. The hominess that you create in there is still in you, and it's portable, you know? So you're capable of recreating that home, and that hominess, the emotional aspects that were really what you attached to somewhere else. And there are the other aspect of it is if the house was gorgeous, mm-hmm. which many of them are around here, mm-hmm. you have a sense of this beauty mm-hmm. that was part of your world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and maybe it was, I don't know what the house looked like, but it had something that you found compelling enough mm-hmm. to go plunk down money and commit to it and pay the mortgage and all. Mm-hmm. So all of that sense of beauty is also in you. And you can find it at least temporarily in a park, in other people's houses, you know. So there are ways to, you know, I just encourage you to delve in and not be afraid of the loss. So many thousands and thousands of people are going through that right now. Yeah, so you have amazing quantities of company, more so than probably any of us have ever been through. How about other people's losses? Even lost fingernail clippings, little things.
We not only lost the house, we kind of lost the whole community. We had to move away. After being there almost 40 years.
40 years?
And this is San Juan Capistrano in Orange County. And there were like 1,500 people when we moved there. So over a period of time, as you went downtown, you always saw somebody you knew.
Yeah.
And you knew them pretty well.
It was community.
And during that community, you share a lot of trials and a lot of pain with people and some really nasty things. But not too long ago, we had a little church we were involved in, had the 90th anniversary. People came back, and we've never felt that kind of caring and just real wonderful respect. But anyway, it's still going on.
You moved from there to here?
Stopped in Portland.
You kind of went.
Right, yeah. Because of a daughter. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so you've settled now here in Sonoma County?
I wouldn't say we're settled, but
we're here for a moment.
we're giving it our best shot.
Uh-huh. But you were 40 years in this community.
That's true.
That's a long while.
Yeah, it is.
And you left there because you...
We had an illness.
So it wasn't a good...
We shouldn't be close to one of the kids.
I see.
And it's one of those old stories. You move close to that kid, and where does the kid go? Over there.
it's like chasing something that keeps disappearing into the mist.
Yeah, but it's all worked out. And it's in the process of working out.
Uh-huh. But for you, the loss was... friends, contact,
right.
Community.
The community,
yeah. Uh-huh.
And recreating,
and
what?
And friends.
Friends, yeah.
Friends,
yeah. Yeah.
That were community.
Uh-huh. Do you keep in touch with any of those people?
We do. When we first got here, we made a lot of phone calls.
Uh-huh.
And we've had various people stop to visit us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. So what you could do is become a place where they all stop in and stay over whenever they go north.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and how many people would you say there are who are going to be at your doorstep?
I don't know.
100?
It could be, yeah.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to need a big house.
Well, a condo, a small condo.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, the sense of building that you did, so it makes you reflect back on how many contacts you made over how many years and the different qualities of those friendships and connections. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that?
Well, just kind of let it be, figure out. did our best to keep in touch with the people that we were really close to.
Yeah.
And then we were surprised that some people kept in touch with us and are still there.
They kind of reached out to you.
Yeah.
They missed you.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess.
Uh-huh. Well, it's true, isn't it? I mean, yeah, otherwise they wouldn't have contacted you if they hadn't thought, well, what happened to them?
We also found out that the two communities, I don't know if you've ever been to San Juan Capistrano, it's an old farm community, but it's become rather wealthy and kind of buttoned up, and everything was neat and pretty. We came up here, and it's kind of a quirky town. All the weeds were pulled, and so we kind of had to develop, you know, an appreciation of where we are and
uh-huh.
see what this new place can do for us.
Uh-huh. It's a different culture.
Right.
Yeah, different way of being in the land or on the land.
And when we go down that way, I mean, you can't believe the traffic. It's really, over the years, it's gotten really pretty heavy. And
so that you can be grateful for. A little less traffic up here.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you can create some more traffic by adding those people's cars on their way north to see you. Yeah, that's fun, though. So you both have similar kinds of contacts, or are you dealing with it more than you are?
Well, we're both dealing with it in different ways, I think.
Uh-huh.
More shocking to me.
It was more shocking to you?
Yes, even though I know I'm going to be closer to our children.
Yeah.
Still, I didn't take into consideration the move and just landing here and not knowing anybody.
Yeah.
And I think that, well, I used to depend on him more than myself, and he depends on me more. But you know, it has also to do with what I see. You know, I wish that, because we had people coming to our house almost every day. We'd have the neighbors visiting us, and he, you know, Coke was healthier, you know, through the years, and he worked with the youth in our town, and that's all gone, you know. He's a peaceful guy, but you know, I wish he had a community, you know, where he doesn't.
Yeah.
Except you do belong to a church, you know. So we're trying to make inroads into what seems to us right.
Yeah. So you two were really a hub of the community. I mean, you were.
Well, in a way, we really were. Valuable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's how we felt. But, you know, so that was a loss.
Yeah. And it took so many years to develop that you're thinking starting over would be challenging.
So we just take one day at a time, but however things seem to be, you know, trying to develop new ways.
Now, do you find that you, in the distance, that you remember individual members of that community more than you would have in terms of thinking about their personalities, their presence, their warmth, that you are more aware of that in the distance than you were when you're living there?
Thinking about them. You know, I don't really, have connections, and we still call people, and they call us, and so they're kind of alive in that way. I have had some, you know, just some depression problems when we came here, so I just try not to do that, not to go into the past, that everything's present. And I tell myself everything's present, everything we need is present here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't long for the past. I don't long to be in San Juan Capistrano.
Yeah.
That's over. So I guess the only thing is that I
you know, I wish Cope was stronger so he could move out. But I shouldn't know that at all.
I've had my time.
He's got, yeah, exactly. He's got his own path, his own time. I know it.
Yeah. I didn't feel. You have these feelings anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, you mentioned the depression.
Yes.
I mean, anyone who's gone through a significant loss reckons with a form of depression. It may become chronic, but usually not. Usually it's a healthy thing, actually. I mean, if something knocks you over, you're going to feel down. So to not be depressed is actually a little weird. You know, it's a little like you're numb or you're letting all those feelings go somewhere else instead of actually sitting with them and being present with them.
Well, it was clinical depression, so it was...
Yeah, you know, you're dealing with... Yeah.
It was beyond just, you know, what is normal.
Yeah. I lived with a person who was chronically depressed, so I get that.
Oh, my gosh.
I get that very much. And that can be challenging not just for you, but for the person who lives with you.
Yes.
And what I used to do was try to cheer her up. You know, I could do this. My sense of humor, I can just, you know, tap my feet and cheer her up. And that's, of course, not going to work for very long. It did work a lot of times, and I thought, oh, this is going to be fine. But that darkness that you're reckoning with is usually something he doesn't have anything to do with. Yeah. It might be your childhood. It might be a chemical. It might, who knows what. So, yeah, that's a form of darkness that seems, at least in my experience living with a person who struggled with it, it's almost like this this darkness with its own personality. It would just kind of come in and sweep over her and sort of gobble up all of the lightness that was potentially there for her and overwhelm her for days. So, yeah, I understand that it can be very, very challenging and about other people with losses, not necessarily heavy-duty ones, but you can join us.
I lost my favorite vest.
Your favorite vest?
I know this might sound really superficial, but it was like so beautiful and so comfortable, and it had these really special things in the pockets, and I lost it, and I didn't think it would ever be possible that I could move it.
What was it made out of?
I think it was part cotton and part like not water resistant, like synthetic something.
Uh-huh. But it was what color?
Like earth.
Uh-huh. And how did you lose it?
I left it actually at a Buddhist temple.
Sweet.
I know.
It's a good place to lose something.
Yeah. Less than a detachment.
Yeah. And how long ago? No, just recently.
Yeah.
And you'd had this vest for years?
A couple years. Yeah. Had a picture. Yeah. Like a picture of a stone and I was attached to. Always. It was like my significant attachment.
Yeah. Interesting. And the irony.
Yeah.
Really. Of letting it go in a place where attachment is kind of what you're dealing with, right?
Yeah.
Fascinating. Now, are you Buddhist?
No.
No.
Happen
to be there.
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
It seems like that's at least that's been my path, is not really settling in on one, but being drawn mostly to Taoism and Zen because I love nature and I love the quirky aspects of Zen and the lack of dogma. Mm-hmm. Those were compelling for me. But as soon as you get into any of these forms, you begin to just trust other people and respect that they have their own way, their own kind of personality as they follow the route. So this vest, tell us a little more about it. Did it have buttons in the front?
It had this really amazing design on it. It was like this cool design. It made me feel safe, I guess. And
uh-huh.
I just loved the way I felt with it on.
Uh-huh. So it was like cozy in there.
Yeah, it was reversible.
Uh-huh. So the inside was significantly different from the outside?
Yeah,
or?
The one side with the design was kind of like a warmer texture, and so I could wear that when I wanted to be warmer, and the outside was water resistant because it rained.
Oh, you can put it around and shed rain like nuts.
Yeah.
It's pretty useful. Pretty useful vest.
Yeah, and it was.
And had just out of curiosity, had the vest been given to you?
No, actually.
You bought it somewhere.
I bought it myself with money that I had worked for, and it was like, if it's big for me, should I buy it or not? I did, and I was so glad I bought it.
Can't get another one. One of a kind.
A couple years old.
Yeah. Well, interesting. I mean, that's it's interesting how we can kind of pour our emotional content into an object like that. It could be a vest, it could be a pair of shoes, it could be a pen, something as simple as that, just that becomes way more than the physical thing. You know, for this it maybe meant practical things. You had a rain, sort of a semi-raincoat, and you had this warm place to kind of go in and, you know, kind of feel like that. That's interesting. Anybody else had a similar kind of loss of clothing? Something you really miss?
Well, I lost my favorite pair of jams last
time. Jams?
Somebody actually took them. I was mad for
them. Oh, they stole your jammies. That's not right.
Yeah, I felt violated. It's like,
yeah.
I just went next door to get a candy bar and came back. I mean, this has been more than 10 years ago.
You still remember
it. I still remember
it. She's going to remember the vest forever.
Yeah.
Somebody swiped your jammies.
They did.
Was it? Was it at a hotel or?
No, it was a laundromat.
A laundromat. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. It wasn't a Buddhist temple.
Well, they might have been. Yeah. That's actually, it could have been very interesting to be at a Buddhist temple in GM.
Nobody noticed.
Well, that's probably right. Yeah, get away with anything there. How about other people who have yet to share any kind of loss? It could be little trivial fun.
I got one. I got a couple of things. One,
we lost the quiet.
Loss of losing eyesight and losing voice.
In your voice.
And losing health.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, we're all heading there.
You bet.
We're all heading there.
Okay. I suggest you detour.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reality of aging, and you know, we're all heading there. So, but for you, you're obviously able to see enough to get around. Yeah. But it's declining gradually.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that day to day?
It's very hard to put words on it. Part of it is a feeling it'll come back. Reality of it. First of all, my partner here helps me a great deal.
Uh-huh.
She reads, says what the phone taxes were about. So I don't have to deal with it full force, of course, by myself. There's a sense of like a new adventure to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense of maybe being helpless and, you know, getting Social Security benefits or being taken care of. And then there's the awareness, well, how does I actually cope? What is that all about? And I'm already beginning to look at that, you know, how to actually deal with that.
Yeah.
And to learn the little practices required in order to function.
Like Braille, and you're actually
correct.
Studying Braille?
Uh-huh. Not yet, no, I was going to go to the old Earl Baum thing tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
To find out what's available. But before that, it was like, basically, you'd go to different doctors and try to find a way to recover vision.
Yeah.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, the world of computers, you'll find if you explore that, can give you a lot of assistance. You can find programs that will read to you everything that's on the screen. You don't have to actually see it. There are a lot of tools. But so you've become more dependent, and the loss
certainly
for you is...
Uh-huh. Right. Like Kevin just discovered. Like there is an object we discovered. She discovered.
But it looks, you could put, apparently, put it in front of a book, it'll read, it automatizes that. The contents will. Where you say, we just call this out, which is extraordinary. I mean, that opens up a whole possibility.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Your voice, you mentioned your voice as well.
Well, that's been happening in degrees, where it's getting more and more hoarse, and getting more and more difficult to talk.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the thing. You become aware of loss of power in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's generally a loss of power.
Yeah.
But in that is more discovery of self than any than the way I had before. In many ways, the power I was using against myself.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's it. And he said, I mean, can people hear him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the power used against yourself.
You mean, there's too much egocentricity around the power.
Uh-huh. Being able to command being, with your voice.
Yeah, there's too much sense of self-value, self-esteem predicated around the voice and the power and the thinking.
Uh-huh.
Well, the thinking has also become much more dull. So, all of that together tends to make me more humble.
Yeah.
it wasn't something I invited, but I wouldn't have found it any other way.
Yeah. Well, the reality is we're all, as I said, going the same direction. Loss of function, eventually, where we lose all of our functions. That was, I mentioned my father's decline and death. It was painful to watch him decline. He was a really smart guy, very capable when he was in his career. He's an aerospace engineer. And watching him go from being a 3 times a week hiker, where he'd be able to bound up the trail better than I. And I was just marveling sometimes at how spry he was. And then to watch him go from there to, I several times helped him in a wheelchair in Petaluma. We brought him down there because he wanted to live there in the last few months. And then finally I got him up out of the wheelchair one day. This is maybe a month before he died. And I was just holding his hands and he was just practically trembling. He was so weak. But the expression on his face was thrilling. He was like, my God, I'm walking, after having not been able to for a long while. So in the same way you're talking about, it made him so appreciative of what he had had and then where it had gone to, just the humbling aspect of it. We are all humbled by life and everything in it. It's really, really the case. Well, I'm glad you're here. You're articulate, and you're clearly able to find a presence. So we appreciate that.
A couple more bends before I'll be inarticulate.
You might surprise yourself. You might be articulate all the way. How about other people? Just want to share what you've been through. How about you over on the register? Has this business held up during the recession, or have you lost some?
We lost some.
Lost some business.
Some last year, yeah.
Yeah, last year. It seems like almost all retailers.
Yeah, but we did much better than
most
business, I think.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you probably have a very loyal.
Very, very loyal customers.
Yeah, so that helps keep you going. Well, that's interesting.
Just speaking of David.
Yeah, aren't we all?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are many reasons that went out. So I think
there are many reasons that it went out.
In many businesses.
Oh, that went completely out. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, a lot of vacant spots around here. Actually, the other cities I've visited are worse than here by quite a bit. So that's maybe holding up. Yes.
What was the point of giving us the books? I mean, I would like to understand what that was.
The book is yours to keep, and
thank you.
He'll pass around a basket. If you can make a donation, he can keep the lights on. That all. Yeah, I like giving the books away.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. What inspired you to write it?
That's a good question. I'm a writer. I've made my living as a writer, mostly a journalist, for many, many years, and had not done longer, more reflective works, and I worked on a monthly magazine for for 12 years, and I worked for the newspaper a while before that. And the writing there is so disciplined and fast. You get a story, you have a deadline, you finish the story, and it's done, and you're on to the next one. And I had studied philosophy, as I mentioned early on in the tonight, and had a more reflective background. So this was great fun. I mean, I did it in about 6 weeks, but
really?
But I really had been working on it for years and years.
What kind of articles did you write when you worked for the newspaper, for the magazine?
The magazine was mostly, I did a lot of freelance, but also this one magazine I worked for was a business magazine.
Really?
And I ended up becoming the editor and wrote, I redefined business when I took over the magazine to be anything that could have anything to do with money.
Wow.
Which meant art was business, architecture was business, law was anything.
Wow.
Which made the field completely open.
Nice.
And fun. And my main goal was to try to help business people learn how to be ethical, how to be present in their businesses, and how I had a master's degree in organizational psychology, so I was trying to help folks learn how to lead in a way that valued the human spirit in workplaces, which is often trampled on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of that in the book, that sense of values of organizations, that if we can recreate organizations so that they don't have the hierarchy, you know, the person at the top who's telling everyone else what to do and everyone else usually resents it, that structure is what we've often worked in and lived in, and it, to me at least, doesn't work very well. It tends to harm the human spirit.
How are you teaching the businesses presence?
Presence?
How are you teaching the businesses that?
We held some seminars, a seminar on leadership and symposium on business ethics. And
I understand that presence part. That's
how to be present.
That's pretty difficult to train.
Yes. I sometimes did that with, we did these live interview shows where I would bring a business leader or an owner in front of an audience and interview him or her live. And to do that, and I would usually never prepare a thing. I might not even know much about the history of the person. And so my style or my approach was to simply be present with that person in that moment and find out, use my curiosity and find out who is she, who is he. And so what that requires is simply being present and finding out about his or her business in that same way, just an inquiry. So that was one of the ways I did it, just by doing, by being present in curiosity.
Could you give us some idea of how you cultivated your presence?
Sure. Yeah, I sit in a way that is, I meditate, in a way that is very unstructured. I do nothing but watch my breath. And that, for some people, is excruciating.
So that sounds pretty structured.
But here's the thing about breath, as many of you probably already know, the breath will do itself, right? If you're not conscious of your breath, it's going to do itself anyway. It's going to breathe you in and out year after year. So it's this funny little window, and many, many spiritual leaders have noticed this and used this. It's a little window that you can kind of glide back and forth through, to being conscious, controlling your breath, and letting it be you, letting it just noticing that, if I do nothing, this thing goes on anyway. Or I can breathe in and be conscious or control my breath back out very slowly. So the breath is an amazing tool. And as you say, it is very structured in the sense of, and of course, none of us can do it. I mean, I've been sitting for 30, God knows how many years. I can't just watch my breath. It's ridiculous. I'll sit there and my little brain goes and solves things and goes and thinks about, I have a daughter, goes and does all kinds of antics while I'm sitting there. And I usually sit for half an hour every day. And my God, I must run off somewhere in my brain I don't know, 1,000 times every half an hour. It's beyond belief how the training takes years and years and years, because that tendency to not be present is so strong in us. And then there are times when I find minutes and minutes have gone by and I didn't seem to be thinking about anything. And then, of course, that thought, you got another, right? That's the quirky thing, is as soon as you think about not thinking, well, then you just did. How many people in here meditate?
Most of them.
And other forms besides just watching breath? With some people use mantras, some people have whole structures they participate in. How about you? No?
I didn't raise my hand.
That's right, you did it.
I have a habit, as most do, of sleeping through the night. That is, not sleeping as in sleeping in the chair, looking around and being asleep to what's really going on, but I'm talking about the normal process of sleep.
Yeah.
That happens to be a very profound departure from the ordinary consciousness for most folks who don't give it much credit.
Oh, indeed. Sleep's crucial mm-hmm. for rebounding from the efforts of the day.
My favorite time is just in the time before falling asleep and then the time before coming fully awake in the morning, and the in-between state, hypnagogic state, if you want to call
yeah.
it that. It provides a lot of interesting access.
Yeah, you're not alone in savoring. Yeah. It's like the twilight of your consciousness as you go from the daytime into the night. It's just the gloaming, some poets call that.
It's a good time to bring awareness to and intention to.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So you almost shape your sleep time with intentionality in that way.
When I do that, yes. Uh-huh. It can be a very rich time.
Now, do you find when you've done that in a particular night that mm-hmm. when you wake up in the morning, that other end of the night, you still have some of that present?
It depends on what I've been doing. Most mornings when I wake, I don't remember what I've been doing during the night.
Yeah.
But there have been some extraordinary times when I've been working on something as I fell asleep, and it was done in the morning.
Interesting. Yeah. That happened to me. One of the things I studied was math when I was an undergraduate, mm-hmm. and I like math. I had sort of a playful gift about it, not that that's something I made my living at. But I was one day working on this spreadsheet. Are you into math at all?
A little bit.
I was working on this spreadsheet, and it had some of the cells had formulas with these if-then statements, and this one was like nested 3 deep.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. I mean, it was, for me, at the outer limits of what I was capable of doing in terms of setting up.
Holding it all in your memory at the same time?
Figuring it out so that it actually worked. Okay. And I kept testing it, and it would screw up. And so I just parked it, and I got frustrated with it and went to sleep. And I kind of like you're talking about, I woke up early morning, and it was just there. And I just grabbed a pen. I was so grateful. Oh, my God, I don't have to work anymore on this thing. I just grabbed a pen and scribbled it down mm-hmm. and then went running and came back and tested it the next day. And it was dead right, and it has worked yeah. ever since. So, yeah, I highly respect that. Yeah. It's like your subconscious takes off, mm-hmm. and all the intelligence you have to bring will work if you have the space for it. Mm-hmm. That's interesting that you do that. That's a form of meditation for sure. A very potent form.
Just walking down the street with full awareness is for me meditation, if I can muster that.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen a lot, but
yeah,
it can with intent.
Well, the Zen folks are very much peripatetic. They're walking meditations in most monasteries. Yeah. It's more challenging than sitting with your eyes closed. to be present, to be right here, and notice everything. Sometimes it's overwhelming. You walk down the street, if you're really present, it's like, oh my God, it's like so much light, and so you can hardly reckon with it.
It's, and then that's right at the point where you let go of needing to reckon and just allow it.
Yeah, it just flows over you at that point. That's fascinating. You have a very sweet form, very very active form of being present. I like that. How are we doing on time? Another few minutes, okay. Somebody we've missed? Want to talk about a loss or... How about anything you've noticed thumbing through the book that you want to talk about or hear about?
I think it's interesting that whatever you need to know when you open it, there's something that really speaks to you. And I've often found that a few different books, you open them and you see exactly what you need to see.
Yeah. It's funny how your unconscious sort of finds what you need. She's going to find a vest probably here. Yeah. It's on page now.
I opened it and I read the part about the plant with the stuff in your shoes. Mm-hmm. I really like to let that or something about, like, if it freezes, then it can die. But
right.
Instead of give it time to get strong.
Yeah. Yeah, renewal. New shoots come back after death. Yeah. What about other findings? You're giggling back there.
Oh, it's just, I'm just amazed at how you really just see what you need to see.
Yeah.
I just opened to a place that says embrace challenge.
Uh-huh. So when you're, I had another question for you. When you are dealing with loss of the eyesight. The 3D eyesight is it's a huge ability. It's a huge ability in our culture. The TV's visual. We're so visual. So for you, I'm thinking back to an interview I did when I was working for a weekly newspaper. I interviewed a blind man. He'd been blind, not from birth, but from an accident that happened to him in his 20s. And I went to his house, and he had acquired amazing. He had a dog that was able to get him around the streets. And, but I still remember very acutely how developed his consciousness was, how amazingly able he was. He had intuitively figured out exactly how to move to the kitchen. He didn't have to think about it anymore, how many steps to go here, there. It was just almost hardwired into him to function that way. So, I mean, what's interesting there is one loss in one functionality, for him at least, and maybe for others as well, led to this growth and development in other parts of his abilities, his ways of being able.
What I've noticed is, in being in a relationship, is I don't know if I would have received, if I would have gotten this way, been able to see well, but if I could ever see well, I would have ran away. Nothing ever see well making me more dependent. I tend to be develop more forbearance, which was very difficult for me. I learned. I'd heard the word, but I had never been quite willing to really grab it. But I'm still not clear, like with forbearance, there seems to be some suffocation of emotions too. It's hard to find the separation.
When you say suffocation of emotions?
Yeah, there's a certain, in the forbearance, there's a willingness to bear, to learn to bear the experience without reacting to it.
Being tough.
Well, it's not so much being tough like that, but it's tough in the sense of, I will bear this. I will bear the experience.
Uh-huh.
Like Gandhi used to talk about that.
Almost tolerating.
Learning to take, as Gandhi used to say, learning to take the hit.
Yep.
You take the hit.
Yeah.
And in that, there's another quality that cultivates. It becomes cultivated
right.
within.
That's interesting.
And I wouldn't have done that unless I had been sort of forced into that kind of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To some extent, every loss has that same push of forcing you to accept things that you have to accept. You just, as you, the word you're using is forbearance. It pushes or propels a kind of growth in the deepest parts of the spirit, which is profound and something at least I have been able to welcome many times and appreciate.
Yeah, because if you bring it further, it would seem to me that you can deal with greater and greater emotionally intense triggers,
uh-huh.
and realize, well, can I deal with that? Can I walk into that one?
Yeah. And if you're Gandhi, you can deal with anything.
Well, he always had a couple of ladies on his arm, either arm, helped him, I think, get through it. Yeah.
You have one.
Yeah, true, that's very helpful.
I think we're there in terms of time, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
So, we can pass this around.
Please do.
If you can donate, that's great. Whatever you can't afford.
So, have you had time for questions?
Oh, we didn't. I'm very interactive.
All right.
Yeah, I don't care. I just draw right from what you hear.
Well, so on behalf of Many Rivers, thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Coming out
tonight. Pleasure.
And thank you all for coming out tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you here again. So.